I used to like sneak under the, you know, the pews at church.
Yeah.
And everyone
no
put,
way.
But I was that kid. Yuck, man.
It was disgusting.
I was also the kid that would draw like stupid things on the record, the program.
What was the stupid thing?
Like titties and stuff. My dad was like, he's possessed. Nah, my dad was.
Oh, anyway, beautiful introduction. Welcome to the Coco Talk podcast. My name is Vanessa.
I'm Gerhard.
Kia ora, bro. And we have a beautiful, beautiful guest today. What is your name, lovely?
Sarah.
Kia ora, Sarah. So Sarah is actually G-sister. G's we've had on the podcast before, but the reason we've asked Sarah to come in is I heard you speak at Her Hope event, which is run by Black Butterfly Group.
Shout out Black Butterfly.
Yeah, but I was really inspired, not so much by what you said, like your story was beautiful and inspiring, but it was the conviction in your voice and like the way that you shared your story. And I was like, yo, this woman is powerful. Like you have some beautiful wisdom to share. You also have your own podcast, your coaching, you know, you work in the community as a social worker, you're a mama. So yeah, welcome. And I just wanted to, I don't know, an opportunity just to like have this conversation because we've spent like the last hour talking shit in our backyard as we always do. And yeah, already like I'm really excited for this podcast. So introducing yourself and who are you? And I guess where does your story begin?
Hi, Talofa Lover. Thank you so much for having me. It's Sarah. All good. I think you pretty much nailed it in describing who I am and how I show up. So, yeah, I think you already articulated that pretty well.
Thanks.
Yeah, so I'm amongst those things. I'm also a daughter and a sister of five siblings. I was born here in Australia. Dingo, as they called me whenever I went to New Zealand.
Dingo?
They used to call me Dingo all the time.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one before.
I know. Yeah, so born and raised in Australia. Dad, Samoan, full-blooded Samoan. Mum also is full-blooded Samoan. Yeah, and that's pretty much me. Thanks for mentioning Her Hope. That was actually, I really felt actually validated when you got up and said your bit about like my nerves and the conviction. Just a bit like how I feel right now. Yeah, like I always feel like I look retarded when I'm talking about something passionate. Like I feel like I'm like trying to hold in a shit. Like, like you know, it's just like I want to get the right words out, yeah. But I also, you know, passionately, but yeah, I don't want to steer away from that. But, yeah, Her Hope was, like, an amazing experience for me in the sense that, like, I had so much that I wanted to say, apparently. Like, and I didn't realize how much I wanted to say. And it was a big thing. Like, I had, it was a big thing in the sense that, you know, I was sharing my story, but parts of my story is also my family's story as well. Like, there were people in there that, you know, I had to, like, check up with and just make sure, hey, like, you're going to come to this event, you're going to hear this about this event, and I guess I'm running it by you, and I kind of had to coach some of my family members around it because it's, like, for me, it wasn't about, you know, airing the dirty laundry. It was more about just reclaiming that power and that shame back because I felt like I carried so much shame on my shoulders for so long, for as long as I could remember. And it just felt so liberating to finally, like, tell my story the way that I wanted to tell it. And, yeah, just reclaim back that power. It's just so... like, I felt like it opened up so much doors for me in that sense, like, spiritually, healing, emotionally, like, in the way that I showed up to. I felt like it was that foot forward for me to move forward because I felt like I was held back. And I also didn't feel, like, fully authentic. Like, I don't feel like I could really, like, I shared on my podcast, started my podcast before I talked on Her Hope. And
what's the name of your podcast?
It's All Things Growth Podcast. And I started that initially because I guess as I had mentioned earlier, I didn't think that there was many podcasts out there and I just thought, oh, I'd really love to empower others. And at the time it was about, I've gone blank. Abundant mindset. That's what the focus was about. And just knowing that, you know, even though we are, you know, we come from our backgrounds, we're children of diaspora, it doesn't mean that we don't have to, we can't excel further past than our statistics or our stigmas or what have you. And I guess I was looking or targeting people, women more so, who were living the life, I guess, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And so I started to, you know, interview them in hopes of empowering somebody else out there. But then I kind of felt like I was held back even then, like, because I hadn't told my full story. You know, I was only giving people parts of me. And to, like, finally share my story at Her Hope, it was just fully liberating in that sense. And I was able to, I'm able to show up now, unapologetically, just me. And, yeah, that's powerful. Yeah. And I'm not scared to, in that sense. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still stuff that I'm still going to break through, but I just feel like that was just like opening the floodgates to that experience and being able to just be me. And yeah, because I walked around paranoid thinking that, like, oh no, they know about me and, you know, they think this about me and, you know, and, you know, I said it with conviction because I did mean it. Like, I'm apologetic about the people that I've hurt, but also apologetic mostly for how I treated myself for so long. And knowing that, you know, the deeper part of that is it all stemmed back to me. Sorry, I'm tipping the table. So, yeah, it was... walked around paranoid, but now I feel like free. And I also feel like you can't talk shit about me. It's already said.
It's like, nah.
Yeah.
It's already in.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that, like, I'm sure nobody is.
Nah, but bro, I think it's massive in our culture because, you know, our face is humongous in our culture, bro. Your last name, like, carries a lot more weight than, like, your own personality or your own achievements. So you can understand why you'd be walking around all paranoid and shit because that's what Samoans do, you know? Most of us are fakalas, you know?
Yeah.
And then it takes someone to break that. So it takes someone to be like, oh, yeah, hold up. Stop talking shit. This is what happened. Now you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's, it's a very hard thing for people from our culture to really do.
Yeah.
And to stick with it as well. Like, it's easy to just, like, blast out an announcement, but then to say, this is me, this is what I've done, this is what I've gone through, and I'm ready to help other people. I think that's huge in our culture.
Yeah.
Mm.
Thank you.
How was it for you to, because, you know, you're sharing your story and it's so easy for us to be like, and share your truth and, like, speak your story. But it's not until you're, you know, it doesn't even have to be on social media. It could be with one person. It could be in front of your family. It could be at an event. Like, to hear the, and I'm not saying this to out you, like, it's a real thing, like, the shake in your voice and, like, the pauses. And I was like, oh, she's really speaking from a place of, like, fuck, this is really uncomfortable, but it really needs to come through. Like, you could kind of hear the, you could see the truth, like, within your physical body and, like, what was happening. Like, how was it for you to kind of keep pushing through that, but also on the other side, you know, when you go home and you're sitting with it and, like, a week later, like, I don't know, like, calming your nervous system down, I guess, or coming down from the adrenaline of sharing that? Like, what was that experience like?
Exactly that, just coming down off that adrenaline and just processing and allowing myself time to process it. I mean, I have so much support, so a lot of people were, like, flooding in with messages and calls and whatnot. But when I finally got the moment just to sit with myself and just be like, fuck, you did that, I'm so proud of you. That was all-time empowering because, it was like, okay, like, I'm ready now. Like, I'm ready to move forward. I'm ready to be used. I'm ready to, you know, bypass my crap, you know, of the imperfections and all the shame and all of that and finally just step into, you know, doing me the best that I could, you know. It was like on cloud nine for a long time. Just very, like, proud of myself to let go. But also knowing what that means for the legacy too, because whilst, you know, I'm having those awkward conversations, I know that for some of my family members, it's a breakthrough as well. And so, you know, it prompted others that are close to me and a part of my story to, like, reflect about, you know, their positions and, you know, what they stand for, I guess, and I guess how they want to show up. Or maybe makes them uncomfortable too, in the sense that, like, oh shit, like, oh, she's actually just gone full Monty on everything. And it's just like, oh, it kind of makes me, like, closed off to the conversation even more too. It's like, oh, don't look at me. Like, I know I'm part of that story, but don't look at me. Like, I don't want to tell you. I'm not, you know, ready. Which is all good. Mm-hmm. Everybody, each to their own. But I just know that, you know, that some things that were coming up. But it was, you know, and, you know, the physical body doesn't lie. Like, it was very uncomfortable because, like, so just a little bit about the story, because we're talking about the story, but it's not really.
There's no context.
Yeah, there's no context. Sorry. Like, right? Sorry, listen.
But why. It's your story. It'll come.
So I feel like my story is very much attached to father abandonment, at least what I thought I felt abandoned from my father, but didn't have a full understanding of the situation. And so with that, I felt that I had identity issues on how to love myself. And I guess I was looking for the validation and the longing for that male interaction or male attention. And later on, I've come to experience an encounter with a first cousin, and which what I know now to be grooming, and basically kind of that seed sort of stuck with me, the first, like, touch from that first male cousin was kind of like, it stuck with me and made me feel special and made me feel validated and made me feel seen. And I kind of just had that seed in the back of my mind, but never gave anything to it, because obviously we lived in two different countries. So I was there as a young girl for a visit to the family in New Zealand. I obviously lived in Australia because I was born there and raised there, here in Australia. And then later on, I've had other encounters with the same male first cousin, and again, just the same kind of interactions, which was like the conversations or the interactions would be around, like, would feel like he was my boyfriend kind of thing. And so I was delusioned to think that that was real. And so just, I guess, with the way I saw myself in life as a young girl, not feeling loved or not my entire needs met, especially from that father figure, I guess that was the big influence as to how things eventuated with my first cousin. I eventually lost my virginity to this cousin of mine. And that brought a whole lot of shame to the family. And in the conviction that we spoke about earlier, is like, I didn't feel like worthy to stand in my identity and my lineage and my ancestry. I didn't feel worthy because of the shame that I had brought onto the family. Oh, that hadn't, I'm getting teary. because of what had happened, what had gone down. And it wasn't just the first cousin. Like, this first cousin had a family, he had a kid. So it was pretty messy. And it was at a time that my nana was being buried. And so I remember succinctly one time that my nana said to me, I'm her namesake. She's like, you're a disgrace to my name. But she never knew about that. She just said it like, she's a hard lady, but she just said it in passing, you know. It wasn't anything in particular that happened. Like, maybe I woke up late, or maybe I didn't wash the dishes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and then she's like, oh, what a waste of my name, you know. And I guess those words, like, were imprinted in me, and I just never felt worthy. But then later, you know, when everything had come out, I was like, oh, you know, she's right. Like, I'm, like, a waste of her name. I'm a waste of, you know, a child, a grandchild. Like, I just didn't feel worthy to be, like, here on earth. So I guess I had to, you know, heal through that a lot.
That's something massive in our culture. Like, that's a saying that I'm so used to from the elders, that look, no shame. Look, they got no shame. It's like, why should we have shame for? But it's not explained to us. That's just how you're taught to react to those kind of situations. Or if someone's doing something like that on the road, someone's trying to draw attention to themselves, you're like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Whereas now we can actually understand it, where we go, why would they talk to us like that? And we can break it down and go, oh, because they went through this. And that's why, you know, they got these behaviors and everything, and they're passing it on. So we know how to, like, talk to our olds now without them taking, like, offense to things.
Yeah.
But it is something that's deeply entrenched in our, I guess, in our culture and families and stuff, that whole shame, shame, this person's got no shame.
Yeah, big time. And I think the two things that are associated, like, in the upbringing as a Samoan is respect and honor and shame. Like, they're, like, closely tied together. So when you break that honor and you break that respect, it's...
You're the problem with the family.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're the one that's, you're isolated, really.
Yeah. But I come to realize that I was isolating myself a lot. You know,
you,
like,
punish yourself with this shit.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to live. I was suicidal. Not for long. I love myself.
Get halfway, like, oh, nah.
Yeah, it was a back and forth because I was living with my mum at the time in New Zealand. And then I was came back. I was sent back to my siblings, and then they didn't want to deal with me, so I ended up with our other bliss, Anna, G's other sister. But yeah, it's I realized I don't know what came. How did I guess I'm trying to process, like, what in what part or what moment, defining moment, was it for me that I was like, I can't live like this anymore. I'm just trying to. I guess it wasn't like an overnight thing. I think I guess I was just trying to navigate life, and I just found out, like, you know, I moved away from New Zealand thinking that, like, I'm going to leave my dirty laundry behind, but then come unbeknownst to me, like, everybody knows in Australia. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, fuck, like, can't hide from this. So I kind of just, I was humbled. I was humbled to, like, just, I just had to deal with it, like, I mean, I had supports, but at the same time, like, it was really difficult because, again, I just felt like I wasn't worthy, like, coming here, coming back home to what I knew as home, and then, like, just being this total fuck-up. That's how I felt. But then, I don't know, I entered into a long-term relationship, and I guess I just seen a different perspective and different way of living. And to some extent, that person did teach me a lot about... honoring myself again and respecting myself again, through the mistreatment too as well. But, like, I think just seeing that person's family dynamic and how close they were and how much they valued each other made me sort of understand, like, you know, parts of that respect factor, like, and how it can be a beautiful thing, and honoring each other and valuing family dynamic and honoring your parents. I guess seeing that on the roles reversed, like, seeing that with him and his family, I was like, ah, like, that was like a model for me to, like,
that's how it can work.
Yeah, how it can work. And then I realized that I held a lot of bitterness and resentment to my mum, because I felt like my mum didn't protect me enough. And I realized now, like, I guess seeing that and seeing that child and parent dynamic made me realize that actually it's on me too to be able to heal the relationship that I have with my mum, and that, you know, and I came to a deeper understanding that, like, you know, my mum just did what she could. Like, she was a battered woman for years. She also felt rejected and neglected growing up. So, you know, I can understand now where she was coming from and perhaps why she wasn't the best mum that I thought I needed. And then it's just buzzy because when my mum passed away, like, leading up to my mum passing away, like, I felt like, I don't know, but this thing came over me, and I was just like, just say I love you to your mum. And, like, leading up, like, 3 months leading up to her passing away, I always made sure that I said I love you. And that was hard, like, to say I love you to my mum and, like, really mean it. It was healing, but it was hard. But then eventually it just came second nature. And I'm so glad that that's the way I had, you know, mended my relationship with my mum before she left. Because I was a bitch. I tried to step my mum out and everything.
What?
Honestly, so yucky. Yeah, and I think that's sort of where the healing started, especially when my mum passed away. That was a big wake-up call, because not only did, like, it was sore to lose her, but it was also like, you're how old and you still haven't done nothing with your life? Like, I think in honour of her passing, I wanted to do right by her and make her proud. And I guess it's how I landed back into uni, finished my degree, and then, yeah. And then after that, I also broke up with that long-term relationship that I was in, and that was hard because I was like, again, this bitterness and resentment towards that person because they had treated me a certain way for years, and then they flipped the script and we were like personal development and like enlightening and all this shit, and I was like, no, you are a prick to me, you're gonna stay down here with me until I'm ready, okay? And then he left me. But that was cool because like while he was doing that, I got to bear witness to how he was journeying, like, you know, he was listening to like Jim Rowan and all that stuff, and like everything in the car was like CDs, like personal development CDs. We weren't listening to music anymore, and I was just rolling my eyes.
Oh,
and
boring.
Yeah, hard. I thought it was boring, right? And like,
and now you're a coach.
Yeah. And then he did a vision board and stuff, and I ripped his vision board up. Like, that's how bitter I was. He's like, I cannot believe you. I cannot believe you just did that. Next minute, I'm making vision boards.
Hey, this is a great idea.
Oh, that's what he was doing. I get it now.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so when I broke up with him, like, that was a big awakening. Because I just felt like I didn't know myself even still. And I felt like I lowered my standards for myself to, like, that unworthy narrative for me played a big role in the way that I, you know, had relationships with people. So I didn't respect myself enough to like stand my ground or hold boundaries or keep people accountable to the way they treated me. And so then I ended up bitter. But then later on I realized, it feels so nice to be free. Like, it feels so nice to like work it out and figure out myself and have the space to do that. Because like, I'm not the type of person to break up a relationship. I'm not the type of person to like initiate things. So like, you know, even with the whole cousin thing, I could not, like, as many times as I tried to stop that, I was so relieved to get caught, you know, because I just didn't feel strong enough to leave. Like, I didn't feel strong enough to, you know, voice my voice or speak up, or, you know, I just had this underlying fear of abandonment, I guess. And that's where that shows up. But yeah, and then so, yeah, again, when we broke up, that was like, oh, okay, this is your permission slip. Mm-hmm. You can go and do you now, like, without any holdbacks. And it was beautiful. Like, and that was, like, I guess the start of that healing journey, whatever healing is.
That's an interesting, yeah, I've always find, like, even the words, like, because I say awakening, like, I think I go, even my son today, he's like, oh, midlife crisis again, mom, like, you're always coming up with something new. Or, but I think what you've touched on is it doesn't have to be this big, like, aha sort of moment. It doesn't have to be this huge epiphany. Like, sometimes we're kind of led into situations, and without us knowing, we're just like cultivating or like bringing in, I don't know, it's conversation or tools or whatever you want to call it. And then just sometimes it's really subtle.
Yeah.
You know, like the waking up. But I think a question I want to ask you is, you know, you went like, what the fuck is this vision board stuff and like this self-help? How was it for you to learn a new language about yourself and then express yourself in a new way? Yeah. You know, when people come to you like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's kind of like when you meet Jesus for the first time.
Oh yeah, haven't met him yet.
No, I mean that like in the most respectful way. It felt like that to me, like becoming a born again Christian when I was younger, and it just felt like this, you want to spread the gospel of good, and it felt invigorating. And exciting, because it's like, oh, like when you're like finally diving into something that you like is unknown, but it feels good. It was very exciting to do that. But also, I guess, like at your own pace, I guess that's the good thing about it is that you can go at your own pace and figure out what you want. I think that's the best way I describe it. Like,
was it something that you started, you know, because we have access to internet and all that sort of thing. Was it like you went down a rabbit hole of Google or you started reaching out for support in some way? Or like how did you sort of find your people or community or?
Super Soul Sundays. I think it was this book, Return to Love, Marianne Williamson. And I think reading that book for me was the validation I need to know that love was enough for me and that the way I was enough and that the way that I felt and viewed life and my beliefs was enough and it was okay to have this view or opinion about the way or belief about how I wanted to carry myself out. Because I for so long that I was a Christian and then I had the cousin incident and then I didn't feel worthy. I just felt like I was so far from God. And then when I tried to go back to church, it just didn't feel like the right fit for me. And then I just felt like for me, Christianity felt boxed in. So that's why I guess the return to love was something that hurt my heart, hurt my soul, because it was like, okay, it was validating for me to be like, okay, I don't have to go back to church. Like, that's not for me anymore. It served its time, but now it's like I don't view life that way. And so then after that was cool because it was validating because I felt like when people were telling me like sort of how to be, I was like, no, like they just didn't feel right and it didn't. And so when I read that book, it was just like, this speaks to me. This is like more of who I am. And that's why I wanted to like, I gravitated more to that. So then I read that book and then I watched more Super Soul Sundays on Oprah. And then it was just like all these people like Eckhart Tolle, like, and then on top of that, like, as I was talking about my ex, like he had also delved into like certain people to like in the South Harp area, yeah, and so I like there was books on books that I was reading to like feed whatever I needed to find out how to be whichever way I needed to be, and then there was lots of YouTubes, there was lots of Googling too, but I felt like the books also guided me to other resources and you know, thank God for media in that way because, you know, you can find out and, like...
You realise you're not alone.
Yeah.
Mm. You're like, oh, what? People have had this problem before me. I'm not the only failure to, you know, it's not the end of the world. I can't show my face in public anymore. You realise that life still goes on.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like, you still got to wake up in the morning, still got to go to the toilet, got to eat breakfast.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. I think what I loved about social media and coming across social media is, like, regular people sharing their stories, and so I'd look at all these people, you know, like personal development, and they were so high up there, and I was like, I cannot relate to you, like amazing what you're sharing, they're beautiful tools, and then just coming across like you're just your average person, you know, like openly speaking about stuff but in their own voice, like expressing it from themselves. I was like, oh fuck, this is possible, like this feels real, you know, like I didn't feel so alone or isolated. Question. As a mama, like this is what I love to hear. I think what I've heard from you is, you know, really you're breaking like a generational trauma. Like you really are breaking cycles, and you did in that room, you know, by speaking that voice. Like I could feel it, and I was like, oh my God, this is so powerful.
Yeah.
But you're also a mom as well, and like we have to, as parents, somehow have to translate our past, our present, and then how we're going to guide like these little ones, but also figuring out, you know, like as a Samoan or as a Māori, you know, we have culture and then we also have like religion or church and how's that experience been for you like as a mum? Big question, Vanessa, fuck.
Ooh, I do that a lot on my podcast. Being a mum is like helped me step into that fierceness because that's not something that I know innately. to be fierce in that sense. I feel like I'm more timid, and I guess because I've been made to be humble, I guess I just try and stay in that lane. But as a mom, like, nobody's gonna fuck with my daughter. And I guess when I became a mom, I was like, okay, like, I just automatically entered this fierceness that, nah, actually, I'm not gonna let you roll like that. Like, maybe with me, yeah, maybe you could have, like, you know, stepped all over me or had your say or way with me, but I'm not gonna allow you to have that with my daughter. And a big part of that is because I know what I went through, and I know how much of that. How do you even describe a generational, like, curse or cycle? Like,
it's heavy.
It's heavy because part of what I've been recently going through is that what I had gone through, or come through, I should say, is that, and I'm allowed to talk about this too, like, they've given permission, is that my daughter's father and my niece, so one of my siblings' kids, entered into a intimate relationship together, which led to me being single, which led to me living on my own, like, yeah. And so in that scenario, like, if I hadn't been through what I've been through, I don't think that I would have been strong enough to set my boundaries and be like, hell fucking no, this is not happening on my watch. This is not happening for our daughter. I think that had I not been through, and now it all makes sense to me, because when I, like, you know, when I was, like, with my first cousin or whatever and all that shame, I was like, what the fuck could this be for? Like, what kind of lesson would you take away from that, honestly, other than, like, bringing shame onto the family and what have you? Like, what is the real true lesson there for me? And now I feel like those pieces are coming together now as a mum, because it's like, you needed to go through that to be the powerful mum that you are today to your daughter. Because, it, like, again, like, if I didn't find my voice, if I didn't go through what I went through, then it would be like, well, who's going to protect her?
And that's like one of the worst things. Like, if you don't learn from a lesson, you know, you go through all this shit and then you go put yourself through the exact same, like, cycle. I can only relate to it when it comes to fighting.
Mm.
You know, you lose a fight, you get knocked down. Oh, fuck, I got to work on my hands.
Right.
Or, oh, fuck, I got knocked down. Nah, fuck that. That was lucky. Like, you actually got to put some intention into not getting that loss again. At the very least, not doing the exact same thing that you just done. And if you don't move on from it, it's like, what's the point? Like, you're just going to keep going in the cycle where you're just going to keep on reenacting the shit that you're comfortable with.
Yeah, I've done a lot of that reenacting. I have. I honestly have. And it, like, I feel like I'm only really now am able to make full sense of everything that I've been through in recent times. And again, like, why I ask, like, how do you, like, even describe spiritual, like, the spiritual thing of generational curses? Because for me, I truly believe them to be real because of the experiences that I've had. And when I speak of the breaking the cycles, like, my dad comes from a strong cycle of, you know, abuse. Like, he has no idea, like, he couldn't even articulate, I mean, other than, you know, my dad used to do it. You know, it's that generational cycle that's carried on through him, like, you know, beating your wife and beating your wife into submission. Like, that's the only way he knew how. So then, you know, you got that, and then you've got, you know, my mom, she also spoke of, you know, whether it was incest or child abuse, she spoke somewhat of it, but she didn't speak to its entirety because she wasn't ready to speak about it. But I knew there was something there as well. So there was that. There was also another incident with my other sibling that I will respectfully not go into detail, but you know, there's been incest in our family line for quite some time. And it's not even just the incest that I want to speak on or break. It's like this way of being that's no longer serving this generation today. And I want to break that because I don't want to live in secrecy. I don't want to live in shame. And I don't want to live in silence anymore. Like, it needs to stop. And I guess that's what mummyhood has done for me, is just be so fierce in that stance and that position, because we're not doing that anymore. I've had enough of it. And I'll do whatever I can, what I need to do in order to break those cycles. Because, I really couldn't make sense of why that happened. Like, my daughter's father and my niece, who I love and adore, I still love and adore her today. But, like, I was just like, fuck, like, it seems so close to home, like, with the betrayal, the, you know, the deception, like, all of that seems so close to home to the experience that I experienced. And it was just like, is this the happy chain reaction? Exactly. So next, it's just like, and like, so it's just important for me to, know that I left my legacy behind with everything that I could.
I think it's awesome that you're like unapologetic about like lifting the roof on this kind of thing, because like a lot of families protect their shit only to protect the family name. They will protect like rapists, they will protect like women beaters and all that kind of thing, all for like a specific name or like or an ideal that this family like holds together.
Identity.
And I think it's especially for a female, you know, like it's very different for a male. Like if something were to happen to me, I'll just look for the closest male of whoever she's been doing something with and just beat the fuck out of them. And then that you've cleared it, you know, that blockage is gone. Right. You've got an outlet. You might go to jail, but but at the very least, like you've got something out of it. Whereas as a female, it's very, very hard to put your foot down, especially when you've been married before, when you've had these relationships, when you're already, you've almost got like a defined role in your family. It's very hard to like step out of that.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty cool that you're able to like pass on the cheat codes to the next generation. It's like, you don't have to do this shit. Here's the cheat. XX0.
Yeah, cool. Right. Well, let me live that on a vision board for me.
When you're talking about like the, you know, generational curse, like I think the biggest theme I can hear even in your story, Gerhard, is like secrecy is the biggest fucking blocker, you know, because we have to hold it, because we're, you know, they, like when you spoke on that night, like you could feel the, it's not supposed to come out, but I'm going to push it out because I know it's bigger than I am. And yeah, just how harmful secrets can be. But I also understand why our people don't speak, because it's so painful. It's fucking painful. Like for anyone who thinks that you just tell your story and then you're like, oh my God, my life's amazing. Like, yeah, for a little bit. And then you have to sit with yourself and be like, fuck, now what? Because this is new. How have you been able to navigate, I guess, sharing your story so openly and not lashed back from your family? But I've experienced that where I spoke so openly and feeling the discomfort of my family, I was like, oh shit, I've like really done, I've opened up a big can of worms, and I actually can't help all of them because I'm trying to figure out my own shit. So I guess I carried a bit of guilt around. I was like, fuck, what have I done? You know, like I've created some harm, but obviously I see the bigger picture now. How's it been for you to navigate that?
That's hard, eh? Like knowing the bigger picture, knowing what you stand for, but knowing that someone could be affected by it. Like the cousin that I speak of, his mother, my auntie was like, I don't know if she's going to tell her whole story. And I was like, aha. Like, I, you know, you want to be respectful, because I do. I still, I love my family. I extend love out to that cousin even still. I went to his wedding. I was like, I'm kind of getting a bit detailed now. You know, like, for me, I feel healed by that. And so that's important. But I know for some people, they're not ready for the openness. They're not ready for the conversation. But I guess you got to choose. Like, you know, like, it's hard to say choose, but I'm willing to have the conversation if I've made you uncomfortable, if I've made you feel this kind of way. But I also don't want to push buttons if you're not openly wanting to have the conversation, because, yeah, I guess I've just taken the assumption that perhaps they're not comfortable with the conversation just yet. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. It's tough because, yeah, like you said, like you could see that there was conviction, like, why, you know, I'm going to press someone's buttons by saying this. But at the end of the day, this is my story and this is how I'm telling it. And that's all I have autonomy over, like the way that you perceive it or receive it. Like, I hope that you don't receive it in such a way, but I also understand that you might, because there might be something there for you too. I'm always open to having that ongoing conversation, But I guess I have no control over it either. Mm. So I just also just need to know that I let it out. I let it go. That's on me. I chose to do that. I'll stand in that. I'll own that. Mm. I'm also open to having a conversation with you, but I can't. What's the word?
Babysit.
A little bit. A great word, yeah. I guess. I can't babysit your feelings or your processing of it all. It's a tricky thing when you're very open.
Yeah.
Because, like that respect and that shame again, coming back to that, it's just like, how dare she speak of such a thing? And that's so private, you know. For some people, it's private. It's not even about secrecy. It's private.
Mm. Especially the old heads, like no one, you never speak about, even like personal issues and stuff, you wouldn't like tell your mate at work about that because you're like, it's none of your business kind of thing. You got these masks that you wear out in public. Now that we got social media and stuff, internet's so widespread, you can actually be yourself and you can figure out like, this is what I want to present to the world, or this is who I believe I am now. I find it was very hard for them.
Yeah.
And especially being immigrants, bro.
Yeah.
You know, getting off the, my parents were kind of white. You know, they could blend in and stuff, but when you get off that plane, you got a brown face, you know, you got Afro hair, people are going to treat you different only on the basis of what you look like. So you can understand the amount of fear that like a lot of our people felt and why like they protected the shit out of all of them.
Yeah, there's the layers of it.
I even sometimes feel like it's a lone wolf experience. Like you're kind of, I'm going to be the first one. Not first as in like, I'm amazing. I'm here to heal the world.
Look at me.
But really, I am.
I landed on the moon.
Yeah, honest. I guess I had this weird expectation. I was like, and I'm going to speak, and my whole family is going to be so supportive, and we're going to be sitting down, and it's going to be kumbaya, and nah, it was nothing like that. And that kind of shocked me. Because
right.
I just had this strange assumption that it was going to be, I was going to be supported, and I didn't expect, do you know what I mean? But that was my lesson, that like, if you open your mouth, you still have to sit and stand in by what you say.
Yeah.
But yeah, it can be, yeah, I just think I want to be like quite transparent, like for people who do listen, and it's sometimes, it's what you need, you know, that sounds so airy-fairy, like it's the medicine that you need, but it truly is. But yeah, I think it's about pulling away from expectations that it's going to look a certain way, and just to keep like continue to speak through the discomfort.
I'm sure that there's like, I'm sure my family, like my extended family, feel some kind of way about it, but it's never actually come to me yet, you know what I mean? It's not landed falling on my ears yet. So I guess I have sort of prepared for the consequence of that. But, you know, deal with it as it comes, because you don't know how to deal with this kind of stuff. And it is very lone wolf. It is very lone wolf kind of journey, because it's like, like not everybody wants to be open or like feel this liberation that you do like that way, you know. But this is just the way I've chosen to, so.
And at the end of the day, when you're on your deathbed, no one's going to be like, you should have done it this way, you should have. Well, it's all on you, you know. And that's the like ultimate like accountability is like, do I care about what they think, or am I going to do something that like I believe in?
Yeah, and leaving no stone unturned for me. Like, yeah, I think it was just important to speak up. If anything, I do it for my daughter, because I don't want her to, it's not, like I feel yuck even just thinking about that for her.
And you, like it's a chance for you. You know, like this happened to you. You didn't ask for it. And now you got a chance to be like, no, this shit ain't happening to you. You're strong. This is what you are. I'm going to, because I guess the difference between me and Ness's families, the way I was brought up, I was told by my uncle, I was told by my dad, like, this is what you are. This is how you look after someone. This is how you feed someone. This is how you look after your friends. So when I went out into the world, I done that, but not everyone's raised like that. So like you go out into the world and people are like, what the fuck is wrong with you, weirdo?
Straight up.
And then you
say, like, what the fuck's wrong with this weirdo? Whatever, baby. Your family looks nice. Yeah, 15 years later, still going.
Yeah. But then, eventually down the track, like, I started to realize that I was lucky. You know, I was very lucky to be born into this family. I was very lucky to have these people that, like, I didn't realize at the time. like, we didn't say I love you much in our homes, but what we did do, like, we saw the sacrifice that these people made for us. Like, I had an auntie that came from Samoa to look after us, had an auntie and uncle that would look after us during the day while my dad worked. And this was, like, all the way up until we finished high school. And all these people just done it out of duty. Never any complaints. Ah, shit, you know, put them in daycare, do this, do that. So I think, yeah, I'm quite lucky in that sense that, that I've got this role model to look up to. I'm like, oh, what would uncle do? What would uncle do? But sometimes, you know, uncle was a bit of an angry guy. but at the end of the day, he kept his family safe. He kept us safe, you know, and yeah, just lucky. Not everyone gets that opportunity to have like a role model where they tell you exactly, this is how you treat someone. This is how you don't treat someone unless you want like that. Yeah. And some of the lessons are like, you got to go and test it out. Like, a few times I've fallen down and been like, being a fiopoko going, uncle doesn't know what he's talking about. Dad doesn't know what he's talking about. Next minute.
It's the stripes. Big minute.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah. Look, I don't deny my upbringing in that sense. Like, you know, there was lots of things not right, but also there's lots of things that I did learn growing up, and that has molded me to be the person that I am and to have the skills that I have or the way that I think. And I am fortunate for that. And I know that I'm very privileged, especially now, like in terms of that, you know, that healing airy fairy stuff.
Is it airy fairy? Is it real?
Awareness.
That's what it is. Whatever you name it, guys. It's real. It's real. Sorry. Thanks, Ness.
It's when we think we've actually got our shit together, we don't have our shit together.
Yeah, and that's what I'm learning. I think that's where I'm coming out of, and that's what I'm realizing a lot now is like, you know nothing. You actually know nothing. And just be the channel to be open to the experiences. But actually at the end of the day, I know nothing, and I'm okay with that too. And that's cool. But I also, yeah, just going back to that privilege, like I'm very privileged to have the information that I have and access that and, you know, be able to be where I am today, because, yeah, not everybody is privy to that.
Mm. I think it's also hard to speak to, because I recently said this, you know, on social media, that I'm grateful for the trauma or the experiences that I've had growing up, and how uncomfortable that can be for other people to hear. Like, how dare you be grateful for sexual trauma, you know? And it's like, but I really am, you know? Like, obviously I wouldn't fucking wish it upon anyone, but, like, from my own experience, and I think it's, like, validating and comforting to hear that there are people out there willing to say, yo, like, it's made me who I am today. And just like your story, Gerhard, like, the lessons that you've been able to learn have just looked a lot different.
Yeah.
They felt a lot different. Your support has looked different. My lessons have, you know, been like wild and wonderful, and but it's all sort of kind of brought us to the same place regardless. Yeah. You know,
I love that you've just highlighted that dynamic, because it's very much the truth. Like, it's not dismissing or denying any of that experience that you've had, hey, but it's beautiful how you can arrive to the same point.
Bro, so many times I used to be like, bro, this cunt thinks he's perfect, comes from like a good family. I
love this dynamic. Like, I love your relationship. What? And I love that you're both so different.
I don't know if you're fucking in the back end.
Anyways, guys, just plugging. We're going to have this couple on All Things Growth. Please.
Yeah, hard. Next week. Straight up.
Now, I saw her and I didn't even think I had a chance.
Wow.
Right, to the max. At first, because I was older.
Okay. Not that much older.
Is this a fifth form or what the fuck?
I look 12.
Pretty, she's pretty, you know. And I'm like, and she went to Barrodine in Auckland.
Barrodine's like a private.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Not by choice, bro.
So when I saw her, I was like, but there is no chance. Okay. And then her best friend was going out with my best friend. And then eventually it was like, oh, and she had a boyfriend, bro. So what am I going to do?
Slap.
I'm going to be like, oh, hey. So I just waited.
So that was me. I was like, oh, hey.
I waited till she broke up with the boyfriend. Okay. And then I'm going to hit her up. And then
honorable man.
I know. I was like, what's wrong with this dude?
Pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 months after that, pregnant. And then she moved to Australia and everything. And the way my mind was working, I was just like, this is what a dad does. It's like, okay. Because deep down, I was just like, I don't give a fuck what happens. Like, that's my blood in you. It's like, I have to have some part in that child's like upbringing and everything. And then she moved to Australia. I think this was like something very common in her family, like to have children young and organized to raise them and be able to like run your own life or career at the same time. Whereas in my family, it was like, because me and my brother, my mom passed away, it's like we were like gold, man. We were like these jewels you had to protect. So when I found out my wife was pregnant, Ness was pregnant, I was just like, I don't give a fuck what your family does, what you do. I was like, I need to be a part of that kid's life. And then luckily hung around. Yeah.
And like I moved to Australia, not a conscious choice. Like it really was shame. Like I just come out of a long-term relationship and still trying to fix that. And then, you know, like depression and then being pregnant. I was like, what the fuck? How am I even going to walk out into the world? I was part of a church community. I was doing youth work within the church. And I was like, cool, I'm just going to take off, which is a very signature move of mine, which I think is, you know, like normal when you experience stuff like that. Like you don't want to deal with the reality. So you're like, the best thing I'm going to do is just disappear. And hopefully whatever noise I've left behind will just dissipate and people will. But it always catches up somehow. Uh-huh. Yeah, fuck, I can feel it. It's chasing me in the back, but I'm ready. But yeah, it wasn't I'm going to go and have a better life. I was like, I need to get the fuck out of here. And obviously it was the best decision for myself, really. And that would have been hard on you, bro. You came from like such a tight-knit family. Yeah, this bitch has taken off with your baby and you're like.
But my dad knew straight away. Once I told him, like, he wasn't, like, the happiest, but he understood that, like, he's going to have a grandson.
Yeah.
And he was like, you need to. It's like, all right, cool. You want to go on benders with your mates and stuff every weekend, spend all your money, use my money to buy your lunch during the week. But, like, once I told him that she was pregnant, he was just like, all right, fun's over now. Mm-hmm. Your life is for the kid. And it was something I didn't understand at the time. At the time, I was just like, sacrifice everything. You saw what your dad done. You saw what your uncle done. And then I started burning out. I was like, what the fuck? This is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to have this kind of energy. And then that's when I had to like look in the mirror and be like, bro, you need to sort some shit out. It's like, this isn't a role, like a defined role that you need to play. It's like, you do have to like figure yourself out, or else these kids are just going to be, you know, you're just going to keep on recycling the same kind of like negative behavior.
And I think, like I said, cool, why you said burn it out. That's not very cool to I meant cool in the sense that you had the realization that like that way that your dad needed to like provide and sacrifice things is doesn't necessarily mean that needed to be transferred into
your life. Sustainable in this day. Like everyone has their own little way of like
doing things.
Yeah.
Sometimes like the things that served our parents and their parents just is not transferable nowadays.
Like, and sometimes like a lot of their advice is fucking gold.
Yeah.
Like a lot of my dad's advice. Back when he told me, I'm just like, fuck.
Don't we all? Bro,
and then next minute, I had my kids. I had a wife. Started going through issues and all of that. And then, you know, those little voices came back into my head where I hear my dad say something. Or I hear my uncle say something. Or I hear my auntie say something. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm doing the right thing. You're all right. But then when you do the wrong thing, you're like, you fucking idiot. It's like, you better not do this again. If you don't learn from this, you deserve the next one. Yeah.
You're tough on yourself. Yeah, <huh?
laughs> But I think that's what I honestly think we've only really come to the understanding maybe in the last year or so, or since we've moved to Brisbane, like how different we are. Like I actually convinced myself that we're like the same and we're interested in the same things and we need to be going on the same journey, and this is the way our relationship should look and this is what marriage should look like. And like up each other's ass, call it codependency or I don't know, just trying to, two kids, just trying to figure shit out. That I just like appreciate his journey for, you know, the experiences that you've had. And I don't know, you used to come to me with all this advice. I'm like, shut the fuck up. You just think you're like so on and you think you have all the answers.
I wouldn't come to her for advice. I'd be like, you're a cunt for doing this. And then she'll be like, I just feel like I'm the only one doing bad things. I'm like, because you fucking are.
You're the asshole in this relationship. Straight up.
Yeah, once we started like doing that tit for tat shit, like trying to save up brownie points and be like, all right, I'm going out with the boys this weekend. You can't fucking say no. You know, once we stopped that shit,
right.
It was so much easier, man. Like the trust just flows.
Right.
You piss off out of the house. Get out. Go with your mates, you know?
Does that just come with time or like?
Nah, you had to, I think I had to figure out why. You know, why are we trying to build up fucking brownie points to go hang out with friends?
Yeah.
Ah, because insecurities, because there may be females there. You know, and when you're with the boys, fuck, you know how the boys act when they're all together and on the piss. Like, there's this assumption that they're just going to be like, fuck, let's go brothel, strip club, you know, all that kind of shit. Or the alcohol is going to get to you and you're going to do something stupid.
And that was my experience seeing men was like, well, if they're in these kind of situations, A plus B equals C. And he was like, do you not know me enough? Do you not trust me enough? Like, yeah. A, this plus this doesn't equal this. And I was like, you're a fucking liar.
Yeah, stupid things would happen when I got drunk, but just not that kind of stupid.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I was carrying his ass home, fucking washing his ass. Water in the
morning.
One of
the funniest ones. Drinking with the boys, she picked me up. She was pissed off. We dropped one of the boys off. She was like angry as, and I was like, man, what's this? Why the fuck is she angry? But I started packing an invisible bag. Yeah. Stop the fucking car.
He was so drunk.
But we're on the motorway. And I'm like, stop the fucking car. And this was like, stop being stupid. I was like, oh. In like a moment of sobriety. And I was like, all right, stop packing the bag. Fuck.
There was nothing. And I was like, okay. I need to stop conversating with this human because he's packing nothing and thinking he's going to get out of the car.
Oh, that's so too funny.
Shut the fuck up and went to a
girl. That's too funny.
But that was my, I heard it on a podcast or somewhere, that it was so hard for me to come and share the truth with him that I would almost create a scenario for me to then, okay, cool, now I've got something on him. Now I can act the way. It's like permission to be angry at him or permission to hold something or... and I think that's what comes when we, you know, we learn from our families to keep secrets, and you create scenarios for something to be outed rather than sitting directly with that person, which is hard, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I also, my dad gave me some awesome advice. He was like, don't go chasing women. She tells you she don't love you anymore. Good. Plenty more fish in the sea. He's like, don't, like, it was more so like, understand who you are. It's like, stand in who you are. Don't go fucking bending over backwards for someone that's not going to do the same for you. And I think that was like a massive thing for me. I was just like, bro, as long as we got each other, we're good. No matter what problems we're going through, we're good. And then I guess that eventually got us opening up, you know, talking about like our past, why we think the way we do, why we have these assumptions, why we have these expectations. Mm. And then we managed to, yeah, get through it. Mm. Not even... It was quite recently, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say it's 15 like, years, so like when...
Like really recently.
Like a lot of it's just stuff that was never brought up. It's just like habitual. Mm. And you see every couple, like a lot of couples we know do it. Mm. It's like, all right, this is his time, he goes with the boys. Is he even allowed to go with the boys? Oh my God, he didn't wash... And for us, it's very different because... I know how to run a house. I know how to wash my own clothes. I know how to cook my own food. Like,
you should do it then.
I don't. What? Swaps? You want to swap?
Nah, I like it at home. I like my life. Grateful.
But like you shouldn't, well, I was taught like you shouldn't have to rely on that kind of thing. Mm. It's like you should be self-sufficient. Mm. And then you come together and then you're like fucking superpowers and shit.
Shucks.
But yeah, it took a while for us to figure that out. Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to watch someone that you love not care about you. not care about you, but willing to live their own life where they're not always like, are you okay? Like, I love you. Like, the whole abandonment or, like, scared that he was going to leave me. Or, and, like, what I'm speaking to is not like, oh, my God, like, everyone fucking feels this at some point. Like, I'm sure there are many people out there. But like you were saying, like, the more you just sit with yourself, and understand yourself and I guess like soothe your own fucking nervous system, soul, whatever you want to call it, the easier it is to pull away. Because bro, I used to get mad fuck at you when you would be like, if you want to go, then, you know, you need to go. And I was like, how are you not even fighting for me? Mm. Like, ooh, poo, what a weird like thought to have. But it was a reality because I was like, I want you to want me. I want you to need me. Like, I want to be
you to want me.
And he's like, nah, fuck you.
My own food.
Yeah.
And my own fucking eggs.
How is that?
Because I wanted to feel needed.
Yeah, well, how is that navigating, like, you know, you have this codependency. You guys were essentially really young when you guys got together, right? And then how do you cultivate growth within yourself but inside the container of that marriage?
But it takes a lot of like humility, and I thank my parents all the time that they took me to church. Like, that's where all my morals were shaped. Like, as much as I don't follow a particular religion and stuff, I don't believe in God. I believe there's something out there, but there has to be. This magic shit cannot happen without something being out there. I'm just thankful that they instilled these like morals. There are certain things in my life where I can't do it. Like, I just can't go and do that kind of thing because it's something that I got in my head. And there are certain things where I'm like, oh, fuck that. I'm not scared of doing that. Let's go and, you know, let's go and do that. Mm. Yeah. I had very good role models growing up. Mm. Yeah. And they...
Ladies, take note.
But honestly, like, the men in my life, fucking... My dad was a very, very hard man. Not hard as in he'll go and jack anyone down the street. But my dad's very soft-spoken, doesn't argue with anyone. But, man, he can work, yeah, he can put food on the table. And once I realized how hard it was, it made me even more grateful that he would go out and do these hours and put food on the table, put us through school and all of that. And then having auntie and uncle there, I had an uncle there. He taught me how to treat my friends. Mm. Whenever my friends came around, they were family. Whatever we had, we split it. Mm. You never make anyone feel uncomfortable. And that's why when I came to Australia and you're like, you meet like Australians and you're hanging out with them and go to a shop. You buy like a coffee and give your mate a coffee and then you go to the shop and they buy their own coffee and
why are you outing them for?
I'm like, oh, what's that taste like? So I was really, really lucky with my role models. And then because of the sport I went into, I had really good coaches. You know, and cool. And I had my ego like fucking destroyed, but it's very hard. To be in the sport that I was in and be like, I'm the fucking man. Fuck all these civilians. I'll bash anyone that, like, you get checked almost every training session, you know? And then you go into the fight and your body's all broken and shit. And then you gotta fight like another dude in your undies, win or lose. And then you come out there and get paid a little bit of money. A lot of it really was like trying to figure your shit out. Like, I always wanted to fight, but I knew I was never like very skilled, I was never like very athletic. But, like, I knew I needed this to help me progress. And it has. Like, it's helped in every area of my life. How to treat people. You know, how confrontations. Mm. The confrontations were a bit hard because I wouldn't have the conversation with people. I wouldn't argue with people in public. But it would get to a certain point where I'd be like, get the fuck out of my face. Or, you know.
You're like 0 to 100.
Yeah. So, but, bro, I'm pretty much like a combination of all the people that helped get me to this point. And that's why I have like a very, I'm very dutiful. Yeah, like if anyone needs anything, I may not have like money and stuff, but I'd always be there to like help people move. All you got to do is open your mouth and like ask and I'll come out and help. But I guess in the day and age we live in and the way people are, that's almost seen as, what's wrong with you? Mm. You know, why are you doing all of this? But
it's a rarity.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, it like helps the inside. It helps you be able to look at yourself in the morning, even all the bad shit you've done in your life. If you're able to like stick to the way you said you're going to live, man, it helps big time. And it shows like over the years with Ness, you know, we've gone through our shit, but thankfully, you know, we've held each other and we're able to do this podcast and we're able to like still raise these kids and everything. Mm. Yeah.
What a dynamic duo.
Right, it's crazy. Like I still look at you and I'm like, how the fuck are we like together?
No, I don't. I look at you and I'm like,
shut up. I think friendship, like honestly, yeah, friendship is really what, yeah, because even if we weren't together and we decide to part ways or whatever, bro, friends for life, like
boots. <Stop that.
laughs> Lies.
Just wait till you get a boyfriend. Where's he live? I'm coming to see the kids.
You heard it here first.
I think even though we lived with my mom for so long, I was telling you before, like, Gehan and I have only lived together for a couple of years because we're always living with my mom. My mom shared this before, like, she's had three marriages. She was, you know, a mom at like 4, 15 or something like that. So she's lived the life.
14.
Yeah. And she'd always told me, like, you need to invest in your marriage. You need to invest in your marriage. Go and spend time with them. So I think that's what I'm always grateful for. Is that lesson from my mum too? Because honestly, if I didn't have to, I wouldn't invest in you because I consider myself quite like selfish person. I love my own time. I love to just like fuck off and do my own thing. And I've never been held down by that with you. But I had to realize like stop running. Like if you want to build something and you want to understand depth and you want to like really see someone, you're going to have to continue to sit down with them and keep peeling back. And I think that's the first time I'd really... discovered depth in like a friendship or a partnership because I was like, oh, this is fucking uncomfortable. Like, I'm going to create a scenario so that you leave. I'm going to create a scenario so that I leave, you know, like never sabotaging, man. Yeah, but I think the biggest thing was counseling, like for me to get counseling once I had kids, because it was a different voice. It wasn't my family's, it wasn't my partner's. I was pretty isolated because I'd moved from isolating myself, of course. It was just nice to hear a different voice and like a different language. And they, you know, introduced me to like meditation, and that's when I kind of discovered yoga. And yeah, I think that's what was like the domino effect of like embodiment and doula and understanding yourself and trauma in the body and all that sort of thing. Yeah, still fucking forever to go, but yeah, it's been a cool journey.
That's super dope. Yeah.
But also when she started getting counseled, because in our upbringing, I didn't know anything about mental health. It's just what you hear on TV. And then when you like talk to your mates and it's just, oh, that's a Parangi disease, bro. We don't get that kind of shit.
I bought into that. Like I fed that.
You believe that?
I fed that narrative at some point in my life. Like, well, that's a Parangi, mate. Like, and that's only come from like, I don't feel like anyone's explicitly said that, but it just felt like that was the
we don't have energy. We don't have that.
Yeah,
the bigger noise.
Yes, like, yeah.
But also, but that's kind of like what they sell to us. It's like, okay, we got these issues. You guys are good. You just got off the plane. You guys are good. Yeah, you guys are good. Mm. Yeah, live over there until we need to move you again. You know, you're not told your worth when you move into these countries. You're trying to be the best citizen you can. You're trying to get that job. You're trying to pay your taxes. You're trying to get that super done. But, like, we didn't really have time to delve into those kind of things. Mm. When you're in this, like, survival state, when you're trying to get your cousins over from Samoa to start a life, because you know how good life is over here in New Zealand and Australia. Yeah.
I don't think we can. I've always struggled with the word, like, mental health. I know it exists. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not disregarding it. But I think sometimes when we go into these spaces where there's no understanding of your life or where you've come from, it's a different way of communicating. It's a different way of asking questions. Like, I remember, dealing with sexual trauma, going to counseling when I was, like, 12 or 13 or something. And I just felt, I was like, bro, this is off. We're in like some weird room and this lady's got like a clipboard, and it was very like clinical, you know, and it's needed. I'm not saying it's not needed, but sometimes it doesn't fit, you know? And I think that's why Māori and Pacific, like, we need to be out in the community, and it's exactly what we're doing, but we need more like doctors and counselors, but also maybe even like taking a step back. Cause I know in my culture, you used to deal with it within your family. Like, you would go and sit in the marae and you would speak about it and kind of like sort it out, but because, right, we don't know how to fucking communicate like within safety where no one's getting hurt or you know, violence or whatever it might be, that it's then outsourced to
messages,
doctors, ticks. Or not even that, just like someone else, like someone, and then they can kind of create a narrative like, well, there's something wrong with your family, you know, rather than understanding like colonization or generational trauma. Like, obviously that's like a new language that we're coming across now, but it's an interesting thing to talk about. I think mental health and then culturally and the Parangi disease. And
what I was saying about mental health was Ness was going through all this stuff. She was like, I think I'm depressed. And I was like, what the fuck is it depressed? That's the shit you hear on TV. All right, do this, this and that. Go for a run. Oh, yeah. Have a sleep when the baby's sleeping. You know, do this, do that.
Right.
And then, but it got worse. It got worse and worse. And I was like, what the fuck? I gave her all the answers. Why isn't she, you know? And then it was like, you kind of got to humble yourself and be like, bro, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. It's like, you need to go and see a professional, a health professional that's dealt with this before. Or at the very least, someone who's lived through it.
Who said that?
Come out the other end. No, that was me.
Ah.
So I was like, I think it's best you get counseling. Yeah, because I can't.
How did you receive that, Ness?
The counseling?
Yeah, how did you receive that, hearing that?
I remember like wanting, I think I've shared this before, but like I really wanted to harm my second child, like because he was screaming and something just kind of clicked in my head. And I remember ringing him and I was like, you need to come home. Like, you really need to come home because I'm going to hurt this baby or myself. And then once you came home, you were just like, you said, we'll go see a doctor. And it was kind of, I remember like my whole body just like, okay. Someone else has just told me I need to go see someone else.
That permission slip.
Yeah, because I wanted to go see someone else, but I didn't want to be like, fuck, I feel like I'm going crazy. Mm. Like, I need help of some sort, you know? Because to label yourself, or it feels like I'm actually losing the plot. And now you've got this crazy wife and someone going to take my kids off me. Just kind of the, and I think that can be a narrative that comes from like generations. Because at some point, you know, our kids were, you know, within my culture, like kids were taken away. Mm. Or mental health, or people who are spiritual or seers were considered crazy, and then they would go into mental health institutes. So like maybe subconsciously carrying a bit of that and so not wanting to reach out for support. But it was a huge permission piece, and that's what really helped, was getting, you know, the free counselling. Thank you. Grateful to Australia for the mental health care plan. Even though the council was a bit off, but sweet as, you know, opportunity to try. And because I had started, and I was like, and just keep going, and just keep going. Yeah, like, don't stop. Oh,
it was funny when she was going through it, because I had no idea what the fuck was going on. I was just like, bro, honestly, I was just like, what's wrong with you? And then it got to the point where I was like, all right, I'm going to drag her with me everywhere. And so she started coming to kickboxing classes with me. And I wasn't helping. And I was like,
yeah.
Is this working? Is this working? Is this the answer to all your like problems? And she was just like, nah. So, and I think that's where it was like, you can't fix everything. You don't have all the answers. It's like, you actually need help if you want this to progress, you know. And I don't want to lose my best friend. And like, we had kids. Yeah.
Yeah, and I see it so much. Like, I think there's like a resistance or hesitancy when like people want to like go and see a counselor, like when they know they need the help, but you know, just don't quite, like something's there in terms of why they don't. And I've seen it like in child protection, where like it's been held against them, you know, like parents trying to get the kids back, but then, you know, they're all of a sudden diagnosed with something, and then it's just like, nah, can't look at this, she needs to go do this before. You know, and it's just like that label on that person. Now they're, you know, tainted by that label, you know. So the, you know, the other side to that, it's like it can be like detrimental.
I have a question. Look, I was thinking, reflecting on it last night, just with everything that's happening in the world. And, you know, unfortunately there are people ready to, you know, no longer want to be in this world. And like you've expressed before that you've been in that place. Like, what is something that you would wanted to have heard, or like if someone was, you know, if you were to, I don't know, like what would you want to hear to like help you? I know that we can't all be everyone else's like savior, but I think if you're being a person who's experienced that and come out the other side, you know, if I was to share my story about sexual trauma, how would have I want to be received? If someone was like coming out of a domestic violence situation, like how would you want to be received? Because so many times we can give like not the wrong advice, but we just don't know what the fuck to do. You know, it's such like a heavy situation.
Yeah, I don't think it's like an advice. It is not exactly advice, how you ask the question. It's like, what would have helped you when you were in that hole, when you were in the depression hole? I think for me it was it's not the end of the world. It's like, you're all right, bro. You don't have to have all the answers. You haven't failed at life just yet. You're still breathing. As long as you're still breathing, shit, you can keep going.
Like, that would have helped you? Well, it did help you, but...
Yeah, yeah. It was the whole, like, you're still alive, you're still alive, you're still alive, you're still alive. You're still breathing. There's a chance to, like, make it better. There's a chance to work it back. Yeah.
I think I just wanted my mum to hold me unconditionally. Yeah. Even though she... like was there physically, I just didn't feel like that she was there for me emotionally. And I think if I was just reassured by her that she still loved me and it was okay, and that even though that, you know, what had taken place, she wasn't ashamed of me. Like, I think to know that would have like helped quicken the process of me like snapping out of that dark place. You know, because I experienced the other end of it where my, like, brothers, my brother and his wife, who I love dearly, and they were, like, my best friends, because I was a changed person. They didn't know how to, you know, be with me. And so they gave me the tough love. They had me walking from, like, Forest Lake all the way to Springfield after work, because they're like, that, fuck this bitch, who does she think she is?
Sure, fair.
You know, and you know, that was tough. It was tough because I was still like going through, like I still went through something regardless of the shame that I put on the family. Like, I still hadn't really known exactly what had gone on too. Like, I was still processing that and what that meant to me and the hurt that I was dealing with, you know. But instead, like, I think all I kept hearing was, you're changed, like, who are you? Like, and equally, like, understandably, like, I don't know who I was either. So I think just someone to be, like, unconditionally loving and supportive. And knowing that you, and trusting that you'll figure it out, you know. I don't really want anyone to fix anything for me because that was my thing to do. But just holding space.
I think it's just, like, again, like, strange times that we're in, like, because I agree, like, for me, it's, like, just to be held. Like, sometimes even no words, just, like, oh, I love you, and then just, like, hold and hold.
Yeah.
But because we are in a time that it's difficult for people to get that, like, human connection and touch, and as human beings, it's something that we thrive on to some degree. Sometimes I'm like, oh, bro, get your fucking hands off my titties.
Who's
there? Oh, wait, sorry.
Who the fuck are you
talking about? My heart. I'm talking about my heart.
No more workshops.
Bro, some of those workshops are fucking out the gate.
I want to join.
Oh, I don't know.
You should do the breathing.
I've experienced it. I'm like, nah, don't hold fucking do space like that. We need to talk about boundaries here. I love everyone. Bro, it doesn't mean you can put your hands on me. The fuck off me.
I'm like, what workshop should I do? Okay, guys, I'm facilitating workshops, females only.
Oh, bro, I see it on Instagram. They actually do that. They have this, like, these two masseuses, and they're, like, literally touching and massaging the body, the female body, all over. And they're touring in America to African-American males. Like, they're G'd up as masseuse.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. I'm sorry. No, like, and that's, like, it's touching. It's just touching. It's massaging and touching. And I was like, wow, that's so sensual. Well, maybe I want one of those.
In New Zealand, they have, like, cuddle, like a lady that I know. She's like a certified cuddler, and you literally go to their place and you just cuddle where there's like no sexual energy or, I mean, like in exchange, but you just sit and be held. And I'm like, bro, that's like a bit fucking weird, but cool, cool that it's out there, you know? It's crazy. Like,
I think I've seen someone like that on the Kardashians.
Yeah. I would never pay someone to cuddle me, but I just fucking cuddle me and pay but you.
I could never do
you
that.
You get to hold me. That
I have to bring my cup everywhere. Sorry, don't mind that. My bad. I'll give you a refund.
I don't know why this thought came in. We're in Cambodia and we got like a couple's massage, and they're like, right, these two old ladies, they reminded me of like aunties, and they're like, you know, take your clothes off, and they just stood there watching us, and we're like, okay. Like, no fucks given.
Did they massage our boobies?
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's what freaked me out, and I didn't know how to say no, but I was like, I was uncomfortable, like, also kind of turned on, and it felt good, so I didn't really know what to say.
What are you doing?
I don't know, bro. But it was, like, nipple. Like, usually it's kind of, like, just the outside, but she was fucking...
Nipples even.
Yeah, kneading dough, bro, straight up.
I was getting a massage, and I'm like, wait a minute. How come I don't get one of those?
What about my nipples?
No, the first time I got that was in Fiji, and I was by myself, and I was like, oh, this is different. But you like feel so like frozen, like you don't even I say something, do I just sit here? I just sit here,
bro.
You don't even say anything.
Straight
one off. Of the like comedian influencers from New Zealand, he posted a video today, and he was talking about how if your barber's like balls ever brush against you, and he's like, and how you don't say a fucking thing.
Real?
Yeah, right. And he was like, oh, I'm pretty sure my barber's balls like touched my knee twice, and I didn't say anything. He's like, does this happen to any of you? I was like, yep. Permission, consent.
Sully, your boss just brains.
He just fucking teabagged my shoulder.
Just ball grazed me.
But what are you supposed to say? Like, even if the massage is shit, I never say, like, oh, can you go softer? I'm just like, well, I paid my money, just fucking sit here and I'll piss off.
No, I make it known that it's sore. Like, I'm not trying to be tense in a massage.
We had a fight in China. We went to China for a fight, and me and two of the other boys went and got massages. This bitch was fucking putting her elbow on my spine.
Oh.
And I was like, hey, don't do that. And she was like, oh, okay. And just started laughing at me and kept on going and didn't put her elbow on my spine anymore. We got out of the room, and one of the boys was like, bro, lucky you said something, eh? Because fuck, she was elbowing the shit out of my spine.
And he didn't want to say anything?
Yeah. I was like, fuck that. I don't have a sore back when I fight
tomorrow. A classic example of needing to speak up.
Bro, yeah. So true.
No, I don't. Whereas now... Because when I was in Chiang Mai, Ness, I was training for a fight in China. So I went to Chiang Mai to train. And Ness was in Kuala Lumpur with the two boys. And I went and got a massage with one of the boys. And I was getting a massage. But next minute, the lady's like, you want me to massage this? And I look at her, I go, oh, no, thank you.
she just points to your penis.
No, she just points to it. She goes, "Want to massage this? You got a massage?" And I was like,
"Oh,
no."
Must have felt really masculine.
I was like, "Oh, no, thank you." And then I finished the massage and everything. I'm waiting in the waiting room for my mate to come out. But he comes out like half an hour later. And he was like, "Gee, ask if you wanted a fee." I was like, "Yeah, bro." I was like, "Oh, no, it's all right, eh?" And he goes, "Oh, I just asked him how much it was, eh? That's all." And I was like, "You fucking liar. I ain't gonna judge you, bro. All good."
I mean, if it's a service.
Helping small businesses.
Yeah. Support local. cool.
Awesome.
Man, thank you so much. Thanks, like, yeah, but just before we go, like, is there anything that you're wanting to share or, like, what you're up to? Because you're on our – so we've got our Coca Talk Live. I just asked you a question and then take over. sorry. yeah, we have our event happening next Saturday, September 11th. We still have tickets available and Sarah is on the panel.
Yay.
Yeah, is there anything you want to share?
No, just super excited for next week.
Yeah, hard.
Next week, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
It's coming around real fast. Yeah, no, super excited for it. So happy that we – broke the ice with tonight. What even? No, that's pretty much it.
Cool.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I can't wait to have you guys on.
Yeah, helps.
Oh, there is one thing. Like, I think you posted about having Grew How Does Your Partner and seeing men in a different light. Mm. Yeah, that switched up so much for me. Like, just to even... I think I have this issue with men, surprisingly.
I wonder what that's about.
And so it's just really nice to, like, hear it from another perspective and hear it from, you know, that there are good men out there and that, you know, they don't need to suffer from your past experiences, right? Mm. And it's just helped me open up or made a realization for me that I actually have this complex with men. Because I am a feminist at heart, but I also would like, you know, I guess I recognize that I need to open up to, you know,
masculine shit.
Yeah, and that, yeah, and that you have your place and you're there for a reason, right? And that, you know, we coexist for a reason too. Mm. And there's a beautiful balance in that. And I guess, yeah, that's like, I would love to touch on that in my podcast.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, so guys. Much.
Thanks, Sarah.